Hello, welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day.
Welcome, Seekers, to podcast number 117 of God Beyond the Bible, the podcast made by Seekers and for Seekers. We hope your July thus far has been an especially blessed one. We began with the last episode more or less taking a fresh look at the very topics that inspired us to do this podcast. But before we dive in today's fresh look back, how about some shout-outs?
Our shout-outs today are to Luke Highland and Mia. We're glad to have you guys listening.
Great.
And for our quote today, I'm going to quote Tabby's son, Blake, because this one has stuck with me for like a month now, and it's my favorite. So I'm going to go ahead and give you the background since it's a quote that I can. We're riding down the road in a garbage truck, and he's just staring kind of lost out the window. And he goes, "Isn't it neat to look at all the trees and know that nobody was out there planting them? And that 1,000 years from now, if nobody touches them, there's still going to be trees there."
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Well, last episode. Oh, we still need a quote, though, don't we?
That is it.
The quote. Okay, that was the quote. All right. Sorry about that. I was lost in my own little world there. Last episode was devoted to the statement that the book of John ended by clearly stating that only a mere fraction of what Jesus said and did was ever recorded. Now, this could be a clear indicator to any open-minded seeker that this book we call the Bible was never intended to be the whole and sum of all that God has ever done or all that He's ever going to do. Now, our position is this. If all the activities of Jesus had been recorded, and those recorded activities would have, as the text in John says, had they been written down, would have filled the whole world, then it is clear we only have a fraction of those activities written down.
I don't even know if you can make a small enough fraction to...
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, of
this
what we have.
Be
it
would
be one grain of sand out of... all the sands
exactly.
of the sea or something.
It would be one of those 0.500 kind of.
So we think it's logical and fair then to conclude that a single book, such as the Bible, can in no way make a claim to being the sum of all that our eternal God has ever done or ever
now,
will
Now, let me go ahead and say, the book itself does not make that claim.
No,
it does not.
Man makes that claim.
Mm-hmm. And in today's episode, we want to further expand on this concept. For the sake of time, we're not going to recap the details of the last episode, so if you haven't listened to episode number 116, just hit the pause button here, go back and listen to it, and that'll put us all on the same page, and this episode will make a lot more sense.
Sure.
Or maybe it won't. I mean, it depends on if you're used to us or not. So, today we wish to revisit a point that we made in our very first episode over 2.5 years ago. It's a point that many Bible students never really consider, but they definitely should. It's all the way back to the beginning of the Bible. In fact, it's in the first 5 chapters of the book of Genesis that are going to be our subject for today's discussion. The first 5 chapters of Genesis covers a period of about 1,500 years of humanity on earth. It is the period that leads up to the great flood of Noah.
I
don't think anyone really... understands. I know it took me a long time because you read, okay, he created, okay, Adam and Eve, and then Cain and Abel happened, and you seem like all of this is
and
happening.
And then everything blows up and everyone's
you
mad.
You have 15 generations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And these 15 generations, then you have the flood, and you're reading it as though that's just a story that just over, and it took 1,500 years to develop. Now, keep in mind, our main point is, did I jump ahead of someone there?
No, this was yours.
Now, keep in mind, our main point is considering the claim made in the book of John concerning the lack of written documentation concerning the life and ministry of Jesus, and that we only have a fraction of those details. In the same manner, the first five chapters of the book of Genesis covers a span of about 1,500 years. At first glance, there may be no notable significance to this fact, but please allow us to break this down. There are 138 verses in the first five chapters that cover this 1,500-year period. In those 138 verses, those verses are translated into roughly 3,000 English words.
So taking into account that we're talking about 1,500 years of humanity, and there are 3,000 words dedicated to the activities of God and mankind in that period, the math is pretty easy. 3,000 words divided by 1,500 years gives us a result of a mere 2 words for each year covered. Our point is that no logical person would ever make the claim that 2 words for every year of time past could be considered a detailed account of all the activities of the man of man and creator.
No, it couldn't be.
This could, at first glance, really seem like a trivial point, but it's really not. Let's look at it from another perspective. A serious court trial, such as a murder trial or something serious of that nature, could consist of testimony that utilizes somewhere near 100,000 recorded words. That would be something around 250 pages of type testimony. And that is just to cover a single event that could have occurred in 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah, the crime itself took place in a 5 or less than 5 minutes, maybe.
That's 250 pages of dialogue concerning a 10-minute event compared to about 4 pages in a regular print English Bible to cover 1,500 years of events.
Now, we're no way saying that 3,000 words, that the 3,000 words of the first 5 chapters of the Bible are not important. Of course they are. But we know there had to be a lot of other very important stuff occurring that may have had an impact on how we interpret what we do have. Mm-hmm. One very significant detail is that the firstborn son of Adam and Eve is that of, and we know him as Cain. We all know the story. Adam and Eve had a second son whom they named Abel. We are told that Abel made an acceptable offering to God while Cain's offering was not accepted. Now, before we go any further, we have absolutely no details on what the system or standard of making an offering to God even consisted of. In our minds, we jump to the temple offerings that came through Moses. But Moses didn't even come on the scene until 2,000 years from now, from this point.
And we're what, 3 years into this journey that, yes. That I've been on? For me, it's been about 3 years. And I still realize that I'm still going back to that mind frame. I know why it wasn't accepted. Yeah. You know,
because his heart wasn't in the right place. Yeah. That's always exactly. You. Yeah,
we don't.
Because apologetics are pounded into us.
It is. Have you don't that realize how indoctrinated you become.
But we don't even know what the system of worship even was. What was the requirement? Because we know the worship system changed dramatically when Moses came on the scene.
Well, and we call this an offering. What you know, was this a lay it on an altar kind of offering? We don't know any of that stuff.
We don't know any of those details.
In fact, we know absolutely nothing about how God and man interacted during this 1,500-year period, or even yet what God's expectation of man's devotion even was. We don't know anything about the system of worship that existed. And with that stated, it is ridiculous for us to think that we can know why Cain's offering was rejected. Yet there have been volumes written and spoken telling us why that offering was rejected and why Abel's was accepted. The only thing we can contribute such claims as to why too is man's ego in light of saying we know why something was acceptable or unacceptable when we don't even know what the acceptable standard was.
I have the answers.
Yeah.
So let's go a little bit. I really don't have the answers, so y'all know. Let's go a little bit farther. When we read that Cain's punishment for killing his brother was to be geographically removed from the area that Adam and Eve resided in, Cain's response to God's decree was, "If you send me out there, they will kill me." We don't even know who they were.
No.
You know, Cain was terrified of them, and we have no idea.
Right.
We read that God put a mark on Cain that preserved his life. So whoever they were, they had some level of intelligence, and some concept of the power of God to respect a mark that would bring devastation to them for killing Cain. And I never really considered that as far as the level of intelligence thing. But, you know,
and they had
Jackie
to have...
and Dallas, which are my sister's dogs, they're not really going to pay attention to a mark that's been marked on somebody. You don't bite at that raccoon. Yeah. I mean,
it takes a higher level of intelligence. And so there was a high level of intelligence, and they understood the concept of God. Mm-hmm. Yahweh at that point, which was Elohim, which was actually Jehovah. At that point, it was Jehovah
and
Elohim.
That's a really good point, because we tend to think that God only interacted with the characters that are introduced to us in the Bible. And obviously, there's a whole...
Well, and I will go ahead and give you guys a big surprise if you think that God was only interested in the Jewish people. You know, we can go on to Isaac and Abraham and Ishmael when God said, "Hey, Ishmael, I will make you a child of promise, too."
Yeah, you are a child of promise, too. Well, then we read that Cain took a wife in this land of Nod. Wait a minute. The geographical location that Cain was exiled to already had an established society and it had a name. And how do those who want to protect their claim that the Bible is a sum of God's activities explain all of this? They make the ridiculous claim that those people in that foreign land were all descendants of Adam and Eve, and that Cain actually married his sister. So I guess one must conclude that the laws of genetics didn't exist in that time period. Shouldn't we find it curious that we have no problem concocting our own whimsical explanations for things we have absolutely no details about?
And you have to wonder, I interrupted you again, but if Adam and Eve had more kids than the ones that were named, more children, why were they not important in any way?
And later, it does say later in the genealogy, and Adam and Eve had more sons and daughters.
Right, right.
But that was later. Cain was the oldest.
Well, I will give you the fun fact of the day thing. When you do some research into this, one of my favorite explanations that came up was that every child was born for the first, 1,000 years or something. They have a number for it, but... every child was born with a twin. They were born a boy and girl twin, and the twins married each other, and that's how all of this came about.
So genetically, think about genetics that we know about genetics
now. They would have been identical.
Now. Yeah, and you think, you know, I'm not even going to go into what that would even...
Okay, so let's talk about another curious point in those first 5 chapters covering a 1,500-year period of the history of humanity. The 5th chapter of Genesis contains a genealogy of Adam's descendants. Among that list of descendants leading up to Noah and the flood is a curious and mysterious character by the name of Enoch. A number of things make Enoch interesting, and it is what we do not know about this mysterious person that is most interesting. As you go along the genealogy filled with begats that I tend to glaze over, we read that Jared had a son named Enoch. And we read that Enoch was the father of Methuselah. And as many know, of those who are recorded in the Bible, Methuselah, who was the grandfather of Noah, lived the longest at 969 years old. And that was how old he was when he died.
When he died, right.
Yeah, and that's where we get that phrase, years oldest Methuselah.
Well, he died the year the flood came. Mm-hmm. Methuselah meant when he dies, it will happen.
And the curious thing is that while each of the others in the list died and was given an age, Enoch was not given this consideration. Instead, it says, all of the days of Enoch were 365 years, and Enoch walked with God, and then he was not, for God took him. Now, our conventional explanation for this is that Enoch did not die, and this has led to lots of speculation. All the text really tells us is that Enoch was not, and we must assume that this statement means he just suddenly disappeared. However, this alone does not make Enoch such an interesting and controversial figure.
And hold your thoughts right there, because I want to point something out that a guy pointed out to me. If you go over to the book of Hebrews, and it gives that genealogy, and when it gets to the end of that, Enoch is named in it, and then it says, these all died, having not seen the promise.
Huh. Isn't that interesting?
That is very interesting.
It says these all died. The book of Hebrews, look at it. It starts with Adam and goes down, and it talks about Enoch and talks about these. It's in the Hall of Faith, chapter 11. Yeah. Chapter 11. Enoch's named in the Hall of Faith, the seventh from God, Enoch. And then it says at the end of that list, it says these all died, having not received the promise.
Interesting.
Okay. The real curiosity, though, surrounding Enoch is the writings attributed to him, that is, the Book of Enoch. The reason we have so much debate about this is that, as far as we know, the Hebrew language was first recorded by Moses. But Enoch lived more than 1,000 years before there's any known writings in Hebrew, yet it's recorded in Hebrew. We know that the Jews were very familiar with Enoch's writings because not only did they preserve the book, and although it did not make the cut to get into our modern Bible, it's quoted from in the book of Jude. In the New Testament book of Jude, the next to the last book of the English Bible, consisting of a single chapter broken into 25 verses, you read in verse 14 of Jude, "And Enoch also, the seventh from Adam, prophesied of these sayings, saying, Behold, the Lord cometh with 10,000s of his saints." And that's a direct quote from Enoch chapter 1, mm-hmm. verse 9.
So now we have a quote, and it is identified as the Enoch of the Genesis genealogy. The writer of the book of Jude identifies him as the seventh from God, and that is the position he is in the book of Genesis. If you've ever read the book of Enoch, you know that it tells an incredible story of angels having children by earthly women, resulting in giants on the earth. And depending on the measurement conversion you use, these hybrid humans were at a minimum of 30 feet and could have been as tall as 300 feet.
And the list of curiosities of those first five chapters spanning 1,500 years is much longer than these few things that we've mentioned in this episode. And let's not lose sight of our purpose for pointing all of this out in the first place. And that purpose is that the Bible is in no way the sum of all of the history of God or humanity. In fact, it gives us such a brief glimpse that it actually creates more questions than it answers. This is not to say that the Bible is not a valuable tool. However, if we make it the only tool in the box, our interpretation of God and his interaction with humanity is very narrow and very confusing.
Very confusing.
And one final note. It is of our opinion that this attempt to make this single book divine and the sum of God's divine activity on earth is exactly what has cost the church and the Christian religion its credibility in this age mm-hmm. of spiritual awakening and the free exchange of information and the discoveries of those who have been awakened. And with that said, y'all have anything else to say?
No. Thanks.
With that said, as always, until next time, may the divine's unconditional grace, peace, and love be on in and radiate out from each of you, our fellow seekers, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.